eloquent, neither recently nor in times past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. For I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. But what's the one excuse we didn't hear? He never told God, I am too old. He used every other excuse, but he never told God he was too old to do his work. And neither should we. Joshua 14, we read that Caleb was 85 years old when he requested the difficult task of driving the giants off the mountain. See, age should never stop us from doing the work of God. Solomon in Proverbs 29 wrote that the glory of men young men is in their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray head. Proverbs 16, Solomon says, a silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. What he is saying is, with time comes wisdom. It's the same thing we read about in Job 23, that wisdom is gathered through age and experience. In youth, we wonder, do we not? When we first become a Christian, what might we wonder about? Well, I come to church. I actively participate. I worship every day. I study every day. I talk about God every day. So why is my neighbor having a better life than me? Has any of us ever wondered that? I have. But what happens when we get older? We stop wondering. Why? Because we know. With age comes experience, and with experience comes wisdom. The psalmist in Psalms 37 says, I have been young, and now I am old. Yet I have not seen the righteousness forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. See, this is the very question that young people ask. It's like, wait a second here. If I'm doing all these things God wants, why am I not being rewarded right now? But you see, when we get older and we start to realize, okay, it's because God didn't need me to be rewarded right now. My reward will be coming. The psalmist says he has never seen the Lord forsake the righteous, and he has never seen them begging bread, which means God will always take care of us. When we are younger, it is harder for us to understand that. See, circumstances will change, which means we will have to find a way to worship God. We must change the way we could be of service. About 5 years ago, a study was done among the 400 greatest outstanding achievements over the last 100 years. And it has found that 35% of these achievements have been done from people of the age 60 to 70. And 23% were accomplished for people between the ages of 70 and 80. Which tells us that 58% of the world's greatest achievements over the last 100 years have been produced by people over the age of 60. See, even in this world, just because we get old doesn't mean that we are useless. Doesn't mean that we don't have value. We must plow to the end of the row and never look back, as we read in Luke 9. Luke there says, a man who has his hand on the plow but looks backwards is not fit for the kingdom. Now, while we could use this to say this isn't talking about a Christian looking back at his past life, this is also the Christian who could be looking back, who's older in age, and who says, why can't I preach anymore? Why can't I lead singing? Why don't I have the physical strength to do this? Well, if a Christian is looking back here, what they used to be able to do, they're going to miss what's ahead of them and miss the opportunities of what they can still do. Romans 13, Paul tells us, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. And you see, this is why we got to keep looking forward. If you were here this morning, guess what? Today, this very moment, your salvation is closer. When Eric gave the announcements, to now, your salvation is closer. At the end of that pause, guess what? Your salvation is closer. every step you take, you get closer and closer to salvation. So if we're looking back at what we used to be able to do, we're going to miss the opportunities of what we can do, and our salvation is going to sneak up on us. We must always know that age is nothing more than just a number. It should not hinder us from ever working for God. However, just as we see with David, sometimes our roles must change. See, when David's men saw that he had almost been killed, they made him promise not to engage battle anymore, lest he should quench the lamp of Israel. Now, see, this is the second time they've asked him this. The first time in 2 Samuel 18, they asked him. But he ignored it and continued to fight. But once he seen that he was no longer a young man and that he almost died, when they asked him again, please fight no more, he obliged. See, David realized he was not the mighty warrior he once was. The army could do without David as a soldier. They did not want to go without his leadership. His role needed to change. Just like in our physical lives, as we grow, our roles change. We go from a child to an accountable person. We go from a teenager to an adult. We go from being dependent upon our parents for everything to hopefully being independent. Sometimes if you're like me, it takes a little bit longer, but it happens. We go from being single to married. We go from being a couple to being a family. And you see, this is where life starts to now kind of curve down. Because we go from being a family to an empty nest. We go from being full of strength to having limited strength. 2 Corinthians 4:16 says, therefore we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, our inner man is being renewed day by day. See, we know these bodies aren't going to last forever. These physical bodies are going to decay. The physical man will wax old, but our inner man, our inner body, will last forever. You may not be able to do the things that you used to, but you realize there are things that you can do now that you couldn't do before. And you see, younger Christians, they kind of need this encouragement. And I don't just mean younger Christians as in their physical age. I mean younger Christians, I don't care if they are 12 or 50. These young aged Christians need these positive examples. How encouraging is it when Etheline shows up and she's in the building? I'll tell you, it's an encouragement to me. Even when she knows she's going to be in pain sitting in here, where is she? She's in her car listening in. Is that not an encouragement? Okay. When we see Nadine, who has been gone for so long, able to be back in a wheelchair, is that not encouraging? When our brother John Salter gets everything squared away with his dialysis and he could come through those doors, is that not going to be encouraging? I could spend hours going through every single person here and telling you how you can encourage us. But we get the point. Knowing that these people have a valid excuse not to be here, but are deciding and have made the choice that they will be here to worship, that's an encouragement to us all. And that is what that is saying. While the outer man is decaying, while the outer body is decaying, these people that I just mentioned, inside they're still young in spirit, and they're still here encouraging us. Now, this is not to try to make us feel guilty if we're staying home because we're not feeling good. That's not the point. The point is the encouraging of seeing these people here. Matthew 5, starting in verse 14, talks about that. He says, you are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp, put it under a basket, but instead they put it on a lampstand and it gives light to all that is in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. See, when they're here, when we're here, when we show up to worship, we are letting our light shine. And it fills this house of this house that we are in. This building that we are in, it fills it up. It shows people our good works. Is there many other things that we could be doing right now? Yeah. But there's only one thing we should be doing right now, and that's worshiping God. As we advance in life, we go from being, once again, independent to the opposite way of being dependent. Might have to move back in with our children. Might have to move into a facility for people to take care of us. But we become dependent on people. And finally, at the end of life, we go from being on this earth to eternal. See, our roles on this earth change, but our roles in the church change also. The sheep might become the shepherd. The shepherd goes back to being a sheep. The student becomes the teacher. The teacher becomes the student. A deacon becomes an elder. A preacher becomes a hearer. There will come a time when our role in this church will change. It has to, even if it's against our desires. And normally it will come when we get older and we are unable to do the physical things that we were. There will come a time when a man might not be able to stand and hold his balance so he can no longer wait on the table. There might come a time when later on in life, the voice gets weak, so they might not be able to lead singing. The mind gets feeble, so preaching and teaching might not be able to be done by that person. It is at this time that we must understand that we do not cease our work and we do not cease being valuable to the church. What does it mean? We must find other ways. There may come a time when all you can do is pray. But isn't that enough? James 5:16 says, "Therefore confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. An effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much." There may even come a time when the generational gap in the church might make it to where the younger Christians might not understand what you're trying to tell them. But if all you can do is pray for them, isn't that enough? Prayer is the greatest tool. See, that's the best thing about prayer, is there is no age limit. The Bible doesn't say after 75 you have to stop praying. There is no age limit on prayer. And it's one of the greatest things a Christian could ever do. See, whatever we do in our life, we must do it to the glory of God and not to men. Whether it be from behind the scenes or center stage, from the limelight to the unnoticed tasks, it makes no difference to God. Wherever God needs us to serve, we must be willing to do it for His glory. Whether it be behind the scenes or not. In fact, many things that happen behind the scenes, we never even think of. Now, see, I had a whole example to give you, but nothing better than the letter that Eric read this morning. You see, I've used the live streaming when I would be at work and I couldn't be here. It never dawned on me once what James, what Karen, and what Sheila had to give up to make sure it was running. It made me feel guilty this morning that I never thanked them for that. That I never once went back there and said, "Hey, you know what? Why don't you show me so you could go out there and worship?" And I'm not trying to make any of us feel guilty, but it's just the idea that they're working behind the scenes, and yet I never once stopped to think about what they were giving up so that I can view the worship. See, God smiles on those who works behind the scenes. Okay, if you know anything about me, you know I love history. And above anything else, I love military history. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of military history to kind of prove my point here. During World War II, Great Britain needed coal. They needed coal not just for the war efforts, but to keep Great Britain going. They needed it to warm homes, to cook food, to keep the factories going. So Winston Churchill, knowing this, got with the labor leaders and he told them, hey, look, we need this coal. We need your workers to do all of this extra work so we could have this coal. And then he told the labor leaders, I want you to picture this. Picture this grand parade that's going to happen at the end of the war. The first wave that's going to come through, they're going to be the sailors of the Royal British Navy who kept our seaways clear so that we could have a safer shore. Next would be the infantry soldiers who were fighting at places like Dunkirk and who would eventually defeat Rommel and would help defeat Nazi Germany. They're going to come through. And then the pilots of the Royal Air Force. They're going to come through. They were the ones who helped defeat the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force. But then finally, at the end, there will come a long line of sweat-stained, soot-soaked men in miners' caps. And he says, when people would ask, why are we honoring these men? What did they do for the war? Winston Churchill stood up and said, I will say with the power of 1,000 voices that these men were inside the earth getting this very coal that you need to warm your house and to cook your food. Why shouldn't they be honored? It was the very same in America when we used to see the videos before movies. I'm a little too young for that, but I still remember seeing some of them in class where they would show kids running around collecting scrap metal for the war effort. It was all done behind the scenes. There was no glory. There was no ribbons. There was no medals for these men, but they knew what they had to do. You see, the people of England did not understand. They were giving up time with their family. And unfortunately, decades later, they also understood their health was being put at risk so that they could have the basic necessities of life. You see, whether our role is to be in the limelight or in the leadership of the church, or whether it is to be behind the scenes, we must do so and stay humble. Work hard and bring glory to God. Okay. Me being up here and presenting this lesson, I love it. It's an honor for me. I'm hoping that it's going to be fruitful for you. But how fruitful will it be for me if when I get home, I sit back and I say, that's right. World's greatest preacher right here. Oh, yeah. Everybody loves my... How fruitful is that for me? Because I'm not doing it for God's glory. I'm doing it for my own glory. I'm not humbling myself, right? See, everything we do, whether people are going to be watching or not, we need to do so humbly. We need to work hard at it, and we need to do it for the glory of God. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. No matter what we do, no matter our age, everything we do has to be for God. Now, if you're like me, you might like to read books that have a long series or watch movies. And when you first see the protagonist get their first fighting skills, they're proficient. It's good enough to defeat that first enemy. But as you go along in the story, what happens? Their fighting skill gets better. They get more proficient. They get to the point to where they are an excellent fighter. And when they get to their last enemy, then they're able to fight them and defeat them. If you were to take that proficiency from that first fight and instantly throw them into their last fight, oh, they'd be crushed. And you see, that's what we could see with David. We could see that our most powerful enemies are always saved for our last conflict. See, David made his reputation fighting one giant. But he concludes it with the conquest of four. See, David knew, okay, great, I killed Goliath. through God, I killed Goliath. We were able to beat back the Philistines from coming any farther. But he knew they'd come back with more. They came back with two giants. Defeated them. Three giants. Four giants. They were always coming. And every time they came, they would bring something greater. So he knew he had to constantly be prepared for this battle. And eventually, at the end, his greatest physical enemy almost killed him. See, he easily could have coasted out. He could have killed Goliath, helped beat back the Philistine army. He could have hung his hat up, sat on the throne, and the people of Israel would sing his praises for ages because of what he did. But he knew, no matter his age, no matter what was going on, he still had to take on the challenges. So we can see that we too, throughout our life, must continue to take on challenges. You see, in the self-assurance of youth, we are ready to take on anybody. Any comer that comes up, we're going to fight them. This morning, Gil was talking about in his lesson that when we're first baptized, we have this joy. And we got to keep studying and keep working and keep... So finally, when we get up here and Christ comes, our joy is greater. Well, how many of us remember when we were first baptized, right? What was that fire like? You were going to be the one to convert 7 billion people and bring them to God, weren't you? I know I felt that way. But what happened? Over time, this raging forest fire becomes a little campfire. Because we know that early on, we are on fire. We're ready. We're going to take on anybody. But then the timidity of life happens. And age comes along and we get a little bit wiser. And we learn that we need to pick and choose our battles. We must understand that not everything has to be a battle. There are times to where even when the truth is not spoken, we need to hold back. Now, I'm going to give you an example of this, something most people have probably been through. We've all been to a funeral for a non-Christian. And the person giving the eulogy, you know, will take on the name pastor or whatever. We'll sit up there and they will talk about this person who has never seen the inside of a church. But you know what? They believed in God, so they're going to be in heaven. And it's okay as long as you believe you'll be in heaven too. And they might even pray saying that very thing like, hey, we all believe, so we're all going to be in heaven. And as my grandmother would say, man, that guy's great. He just prayed everybody into heaven. We know it doesn't work that way. In our youth, we might want to stand up and say, you are wrong. This is why, and we might want to preach and teach everybody there. How many souls are we actually going to save at that funeral? The timidity of life will tell us, hey, you know what? Let it go. Let it go. You will have other times to talk to most of these people. Just let it go. What about when we're sitting around with friends and family? And you start to hear them say stuff like, oh, well, if God's such a loving God, it's okay. I'm a good person. I'm going to be in heaven. In our youth, what are you talking about? We're going to hit them upside the head. Read the Bible. Right? We're going to thump them over until they understand. But that's not going to win them over. As we get older, we learn how to have that conversation. We learn how to say, okay, well, is that what you believe? Because, see, I believe something different because I read something different. How about we sit down and we talk about it? See, in youth, we are full of fire and passion for the Lord. While we still have that as we get older, we learn how to use it. Wisdom can be the better part of valor. But we must also never shy away from a fight that needs a warrior. Christ has a place for the battle-tested warrior who can defeat enemies that might overcome a new convert. Think about it. If somebody were to come forward tonight and if they were to be baptized and we go out into the parking lot and a group of Mormons come up to talk to us, are we going to look at that new convert and say, hey, you're baptized. Go. Do your thing. Teach them. How lost are they going to be when they start talking? But now we get somebody who's 20, 30, 40, 50 years. You know what? They have the experience to go up against them. So what might we do? You use my experience and we're going to teach them, and I'm going to use your fire and passion, and we're going to teach them. You're going to work together. And Christ has a place for us when we do that. The second thing that we can understand about this last conflict is that David's first battle was against giants, was against a giant, and his second was also against giants. As I said, he knew that the Philistines would keep coming. After all, he took down their mightiest warrior at the time. So they wanted revenge. So David knew he must always be ready for war. We too must always be ready for spiritual warfare. Ephesians 6, one of my most favorite chapters in the entire Bible, talks about having the full armor of God. Starting in verse 13, he says, "Therefore, take up the full armor of God, that you may be able to resist in the evil day, and having done everything, to stand firm. Stand firm, therefore, having girded your loins with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. In addition to all, taking up the shield of faith, with which you will be able to extinguish the flaming arrows of the evil one. And take up the helmet of salvation and the sword of truth, which is the word of God. With all prayer and petition, pray all the time in the Spirit. And with all this in view, be on alert with all preservation and petition for all the saints." What is he saying here? He's saying we must always be prepared. We must never think that our battle is done, no matter our age. The second we set down all of our armor, we set down all of our weapons that we have, and we sit back and we say, "I have done what I could for the Lord." Unless we are ready to die at that point, the devil will come. And you see, that's what we need to understand, is from our baptism to our coffin, we will fight the greatest enemy mankind has ever known. And that is Satan. See, I did a whole lesson on him a few years back. And one of the things I said is, the greatest trick the devil ever played on this world is making people believe he doesn't exist. Once we are ready to set everything down, that's when he will attack. 1 Peter 5:8 says, "Be of sober spirit and be on alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls like a roaring lion, seeking whom he will devour." But you see, Paul wrote in Romans 8 saying that in all things we are more than conquerors through him who loves us. No matter how bad the battles get, no matter how many battles we lose, through Jesus Christ, we will be conquerors. It was said that 63% of all battles during the Revolutionary War were won by Britain. 63%. Yet we still won the war. Battles mean nothing. We will lose battles. But when we go to the point of giving up, that is when the devil wins. We must remember that through all things we will be more than conquerors. But the greatest enemy of Christians, if you ask people, people will tell you is death. Why, that's got to be our greatest enemy, right? 1 Corinthians 15, Paul writes about death extensively. He tells us that death is relentless. That death is unstoppable. He's an unbeatable enemy. There's nothing we can do to stop death. All the advancements in medical science. You could eat healthy and you could work out every day. And guess what? You're going to die healthy and in shape. You're still going to die. There's nothing we can do to stop death. Death will constantly pursue us. I was told once growing up that, you know, we are all going towards death at the same rate of speed. It's just some people get there before others. From the moment we are born, we start to die. Now, those of you who know literature, if I'm wrong, you can correct me on this, but I believe, wasn't it Shakespeare's Hamlet that started out with the gravekeeper digging the grave? And when he was asked, who is this for? It's for the child that was just born, talking about Hamlet. It's a metaphor that is true, saying that the moment we take our first breath is the moment we start to die. So yes, this would be scary for a lot of us. But how do we handle it? Our first two or three decades, we don't care. We don't think about it. You know, it doesn't affect us. Yeah, we might go to a grandparent's funeral, or we might hear a lesson on the brevity of life. But it makes no personal connection to us. We're young. We're growing. We are gaining every day. We're getting stronger. We're getting smarter. We're getting more physically agile. We're developing competence in both job skills and social skills. We don't have time to think about death. Then about a third, fourth, fifth decades, we get our first glimpse at this enemy. Right? We can understand that he's closer than before, and he's not hiding. It could come at the death of a close personal friend, or somebody younger than us succumbing to a disease and dying. We might even be in the hospital for the first time or have our own brush with death. We look in the mirror and we can start to notice gray hair that wasn't there, or no hair at all. We start to notice wrinkles around the eyes and around the mouth, and we start to notice, okay, we're getting a little bit older here. Then about the seventh or eighth decade of our life, death will deal us a blow. It could be the loss of a spouse. It could be an incurable or unreversible disease that we have, and it sets a time limit on us. And while this stuff can make us scared, as Christians, we need to understand that we're just that much closer to our final victory. Death should not be looked at as an enemy to us, because we know that we will pass through death to the resurrection of glory. 1 Corinthians 15:54, but when this perishable will have put on the imperishable, and the mortal have put on immortality, then will come about the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. James 5:28 says, do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs will hear his voice. And when he comes forth, those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life, and those who committed evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment. You see, death is not, you know, death doesn't take sides. Whether you believe or not, guess what? Everybody will be resurrected. It just depends which resurrection you're going to get. See, if you live a life for God, you're going to get the resurrection of life. If not, you'll get the resurrection of judgment. See, everybody fears death, but we need to understand that death cannot separate us from God's love. See, if we physically die, all that's going to happen is we're going to be in Christ's love. We're going to have the resurrection of life. And even if we have a spiritual death, even when we sin and we have that separation from God and Christ, guess what? He still loves us. How do we know this? Because he died on the cross. He shed his blood so that when we have that separation, his love is still there, that if we go to him in prayer with asking for forgiveness with a contrite heart, he will forgive us. God will forgive us. Why? Because of the love of Christ. So let's not think of death as our enemy. Let's just think of him as our friend who's taken us home. If I were to tell you at the end of service, let's get in my car and we'll all go to heaven, are you going to look at me as your enemy or as your friend? Death was disarmed. Its stinger was removed when Christ died, when Christ was resurrected. See, Christ defeated death in his resurrection. So there is only one weapon death can hold over us. And that is the valid accusation of unforgivable sin. You see, this is what people fear when they want to die. And I'm going to say something, and it's probably going to hurt a little bit. But if you are a Christian and you fear death, look at your life a little bit better. I don't fear death. I fear dying, which is totally different. When it gets to the point where I have to die, I want it to be quick and painless. I don't want to battle and feel all this. I don't want that. I feel sorrow when I see people like that. But do I fear death himself? No. Death could come for me anytime he wants. As Christians, we should not fear death. We should not fear it because we know what is coming. But if we do fear death, I'm here to tell you, don't feel ashamed. Don't be like, oh no, something. Use that fear to motivate you into changing your life so that you no longer fear death. As we close up the sermon, I want to leave you with this one little point. Once again, military history here. Think of death. Think of the period between Christ's resurrection and ours. Okay? Death has been disarmed, but he's not destroyed. He is still there. May 8th, 1945 was VE Day for World War II. That is the day we say World War II ended. Did you know it took almost 2 years for the Paris Peace Conferences to happen to finally end the conflict and the hostilities in Germany? See, the war was over. Nazi Germany was no longer a threat, but there were still hostilities there. When we drove the British away during the Revolutionary War, when they finally waved that white flag of surrender, their warships stayed in our bays for 3 months. See, they were defeated, but they were still there. Death is defeated, but he's still here. The only power he can give us, that he has over us, is the power of that unforgiven sin. See, there's much we can learn from David as an old warrior. No matter what your age, no matter what's going on, keep fighting because the victory is assured. But there's only one way that we can have this victory assured. And that is hearing his word, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. And then finally, arise as a new person and walk in his steps. Follow the battle plan that he gives us. Not so that we can have victory over this world, but so that we can have victory at the end. Trust me, I don't want this world. They could take this world. I don't want it. I'm just here on this rock, spinning in space until it's my time to go home. But you see, this world changes. Everybody changes. Technology changes. So a lot of times that starts pulling on us. We get lost. We get confused. We use our own judgments. Sometimes we don't follow the battle plan. Sometimes we feel like we are all alone in this world. Sometimes we feel useless. Well, I'm telling you, everybody here knows you are not. So whether you need to come and start your commitment with God, or whether you have drifted away in this world and you need the prayers of the congregation, whatever it may be, we ask that you please come forward as together we stand and sing.
Be set, oh, tonight.